Come on, Michael.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. A priest, a rabbi, and a monk walk into a bar. And the bartender says, is this some kind of joke? Thanks, Steph. all right, so I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Ryan. Hopefully I can recover from that joke. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise and that will distract others. We take this time to get connected to God. We let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help us stay focused on the step study tonight. Some good things to think about is breathing out self and breathing in God. So if everybody's ready, we're going to start the meditation. Our family's fog light prayer. If you don't know it, it's right up here. God, your love shine through me like a fog light. So those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Bradley to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
I'm Bradley, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bradley.
Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. If you do need to use the restroom, though, it's through those doors and around the corner. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane or meeting mode, or you could just turn them off. And tonight we have Marion speaking. She's doing her fifth session of this series. The thing I like about listening to Marion is that she's not afraid to be vulnerable. She knows, I think that she knows, that she has to put everything on the line to help save people's lives. So I'm not going to waste any more time. I'm just going to bring up Marion.
Thank you. Oh boy, that was loud. Yay. I'm Marion. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 11th, 1989, and I want to welcome anyone who's new to the Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And where'd Ryan go? There you are. Peter and I watched this series, if you ever get a chance. Here's a little plug for it. It's called I'm Dying Up Here. And it's this really cool series about comedians set back in the 70s. And, you know, who has not appreciated his jokes? You know what I mean? Have you guys? He's been writing them, and it's just so cool. And so it went a little flat, and I know what that's like. And, you know, I've sang songs with my whole heart, and it's like, really? Nobody clapped or whatever. And it just... it's just so funny because it just goes so hand in hand with our alcoholism. You could tell 1,000 great jokes and everybody laughs, and tell one that goes flat and it's like, I suck. You know, or I could sing a bunch of great, you know, feel good, make people feel good or whatever, and then, because Peter hears it definitely, you know, where it's like, but I really sucked. You know, because we have this stuff, you know, we just have so much stuff inside of us that, oh, it's about me, whether I'm bad or whether I'm good or whether I'm not enough or whether I am all that in a bag of chips. It's just crazy, you know. And actually, I heard this thing on the news today, which kind of, what does this have to do with this? I'm just going to say it because it was so ridiculous. That they're, you know, now making bags of Doritos for women only. And I was just like, smaller with less cheese dust on them. And I was just like, seriously, I want the dust and I want the big chip. You know, if I'm binging on some potato chips and I'm binging on some Doritos, I want the bag and I want it all, you know. I was just like, what is this world coming to that we have to have our own Doritos? But what does that have to do with Alcoholics Anonymous? Well, it just has, the way we think, the way we overreact, the way we think things are about us, and, you know, just all that stuff, you know. So I was thinking of how I was going to, I don't even know, Frito-Lay, do they make Doritos, writing them a letter and, you know, really getting on that, you know, make the Doritos for everyone. You know, it's part of my nature. I'm a hippie, you know. Come on, everybody, let's all have Doritos. So where is this going to go? So I'm on step five. And I'm wherever God's going to take us tonight. And I know that this step is vital. It's vital for us as alcoholics, you know. And I was thinking about this today, you know. It's that place where, you know, we get honest with God and we get honest with another human being and discover and uncover and discard all these things that kept, that block us from God. And I think about how serious a lot of us can take this step where it's like, you know, it's like, oh, I write my fourth step and I get too busy, or my sponsor gets too busy, or, you know, maybe I need a new sponsor, or, you know, all these things that keep us blocked, all these things that want to, you know, our pride and our ego, and how it's like we just don't want to look, you know, we don't want to look that deep and we don't want to look that hard. And I kind of had have an ear thing going on, and possibly another like ear infection, right? So it's crazy, you know. It was like a month ago this was happening and it cleared up, and then it was back today. And it's so weird, like, how the alcoholic can just build, you know. Until Peter came home, I didn't talk to anybody about it. And he came home and whatever, but I had it all built up in my head. Now I'm going to go deaf and I'm going to need tubes in my ears, and I'm going to, you know, all these things that we build up in our selfishness and self-centeredness, that I am in trouble sometimes when I'm alone. I am in so much trouble when I'm alone in my head. And nobody, and I say this to my girls all the time, you know, nobody's going to beat you up like you do. You know, they would tell me that in the early days, you know, put the bat away, man. And it's been, you know, my walk in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think for so many of us, it's like, I came in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I was so glad that they welcomed me in, and I was so glad that I had a place, and I was so glad that nobody was looking at my defects and, you know, had a microscope up to them and going, hey, you know what, you don't qualify, get out, you've relapsed too many times, get out, you don't believe the way I do, get out. And it was really cool. Like the other day, I'm just telling a bunch of stories for now, but the other day I was talking to my oldest son, and he, you know, totally admits he's an alcoholic, and we've had all these conversations over the years, and he has this huge heart, and he's a wonderful young man, And he is, because he's my son. But he is just because that's who Brandon is. He's just a cool cat. And always said cat. And so I was talking to him about us, and I was talking to him, you know, in a way that he never understood. And he was trying to get a friend down here to go to detox, and he went in with both barrels by himself into this place that people were, you know, that were doing crazy things in, and he went in to save his friend, and his heart and his intention was so good, and he even drank with this kid for a few days. He, you know, sacrificed himself to drink with his friend. You know, so sacrificial. But he's like, "Mom, I'm so hungover. I've been drinking for days," and blah, blah, blah. And I was talking to him about us. And I was talking to him in a way that he'd never understood before. And I just said, "You know, Brandon, you're probably an alcoholic. The big book says it doesn't say we can't diagnose someone on alcoholic. It says we don't really like to, but I kind of like to, and with my son, you know." And so I said, "Brandon, you know what's great about Alcoholics Anonymous? We're all a bunch of people that just totally screw up our lives, and then we say, 'Come on in,' you know." And he was just laughing, like he'd never looked at it that way. He'd always looked at it as, you know, "Mom's been sober so long, and how do you do that?" and all this stuff. But he had a different perspective of, yeah, they screwed their life up, and now they're getting it together, and we need each other to do that. So that was just kind of the angle, you know, that's just what we were talking about. So time and time again in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and time again, it's like, it's about another inventory. It's about another purging. It's about another never having it right. You know, there's no sainthood in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's nobody I've never met a person that's arrived. And I was telling a sponsee about that this afternoon, that, you know, it gave me great freedom in the rooms to hear some old timers that, you know, would share, and they were still a little bit screwed up on different days. And I'd be like, because I'm screwed up, and I'd hear them talk about how screwed up they were. It gave me a shot at this. You know, it gave me a shot at this, that, oh, I don't just get bright and shiny and perfect and become an old timer and have to have my poop together forever. It's like, no, we're not saints, and this work will come again, and it'll come again, and it'll come again in our lives, and that there's just no arrival. I guess until we go home, you know, till we go home to our Maker. And so last week I was talking about, you know, using, this has been on my heart all week long. I was talking about using the sick man's prayer on page 66 and 67, and, you know, resentments being our number one offender. And then I was talking about my ex-husband and how I needed to pray for him, and using the prayer and freedom from bondage. And one of the things I know is that, you know, resentment is my number one offender. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease and 100 forms of fear, and that's who I am. And what I didn't get to say, so this bugged me all week long, is this is my opinion. And what I know is that when it comes to forgiveness for me, what I've known to be true is that I have to make a decision. I have to make a decision that I'm going to forgive. And after I make the decision, I need to take some action. And when I take that action, I talked about, you know, the freedom from bondage prayer on page 552, about praying for someone for 2 weeks, and whether you wanted it for them or not, and you find at the end that you begin to mean it. And I remember walking or driving down the road, and I had been praying for this person, and I didn't want to pray. And first I had to pray for willingness, and then I started praying. And then I found through praying, then I found after a while that I began to mean it, and I began to feel it. And then I remember a time I'm driving down the road, and the thought of this person came to my mind. And our big book talks about in a place of neutrality, safe and protected, and I was. And I've remained that way in many areas of inventories I've done. And I can tell you that my opinion that I want to share is that only God, I believe, can grant me that forgiveness. But I have to take action for that to happen. I have to take action. And the deal is, so that's just the deal, my prayers that I use and I implement with my sponsees of how to, okay, I've got this resentment. It's eating me up. It's destroying me. What do I do with it? And so that's just some action with that. But when we talk about taking this personal inventory and being thorough, my first time through this work, I've told you guys that I had lost my first sponsor to cancer, and it was a really, really hard time in my life, and I just became really, is it called complacency? I guess probably complacency. I was going to meetings. I was doing the 1-2-3 dance, 1-2-3 dance. I was sitting on this 4-step, and I came to a time and a place where I had a drink in my hand, and the fear came over me like, you know, nothing I'll ever describe in my whole entire life. How God's, there came a time and a place where God separated me from that drink, and I set it down and I ran out. And what I did was I moved forward with that 4-step because I was sitting on it, and our book talks about that. If we sit on these things, we can drink again. And for us to drink is to die. For me not to go forward in that, and I lost my sponsor, and what do I do with this? And and my first time, oh boy, my first time doing this work, there it goes. My first time through this work, I had this hero, and his name was Ron Slater. And I know that if you've ever heard me talk, you've heard me mention him. And he was a man of God. And he was part of New Life Fellowship Church in Linden, Washington. And he loved me to life. He never shoved God down my throat. My kids would go to church, and he always had a pocket full of candy, and he'd give candy, and he had, like, it's like the 70s, and he's got the blue leisure suit and the afro, and he was just so full of love and so full of kindness, and he was just in my life, you know. He married my husband and I, and the day that my son passed on, he showed up at the hospital, and when my mom passed on, he was there. I mean, he was just in my life. And there was never, I wasn't a Bible-carrying person. I wasn't sober. He was just in my life and a hero. And so I was sitting on this work, and I was tormented with this stuff. And I had a new sponsor, and it wasn't clicking, and I was grieving Kathy. And so I had this brother who got sober. God, he must have been 6 months sober. Eric must have been 6 months sober at the time. And I was telling him how I was sitting on this thing. And he suggested to me, he goes, well, maybe you should do it with Ron. And he was a wonderful friend of Alcoholics Anonymous. He would go to the treatment centers and he'd listen to 5 Steps. And I'm reminded of him today as I'm kind of weird and kind of cool that I'm standing in front of a church tonight, because I feel like, you know, we were watching some stuff earlier and I heard an old gospel song and it reminded me of him, and I was like, wow, God, how cool is that? And so I made this appointment with him. And he was coming over to my house, and he was going to come at 9 o'clock in the morning, and he was going to be at my house. And back in the day, you guys, when in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know what we used to do? We used to get people's phone numbers. And you know what we did? We wrote them on napkins. We wrote them on little pieces of paper. And we just throw them in our handbag. And I just had this pile of numbers on my dresser. And And it came the morning that he was going to come over, and I was going to go through this step with him. And I got really, really scared. Because I don't know about you, but when you go to tell your deep secrets of your past to a preacher, it's kind of scary. And so there I was. That morning I had gone through all those pieces of paper, and I was calling all these people, and I'm trying to get somebody over to my house before Ron was coming over, and I couldn't get a hold, like good AAs, I couldn't get a hold of anybody, you know. and he showed up at my door. And it's interesting how it says this in our big book, which was really, this is another thing I've been thinking about, is, and it's interesting to me, anyway, it popped to me today, or the other day, I can't remember. So on page 75, it says, and usually when I've listened to, I don't know how many fifth steps in my life, and I believe they're sacred. I believe that there's that confidence that we get to share with somebody else, that this vital step we get to take, that God knows this stuff anyway, guys. God knows this stuff anyway. God knows every single bit of it. But that freedom that comes when we connect with somebody else and we're able to like it says, illuminating, shedding a light on every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. But what was interesting to me, and that's crazy, is this first line that says this, we pocket our pride and go to it. And, you know, everything leading up to this, we pocket our pride. Bill doesn't say, okay, you got to get rid of your pride first and then go do your fifth step. You don't bury your pride. You're not going to become less prideful. He says we put it in our pocket. I mean, does he know alcoholics or what? This is what I'm thinking about today. You know, does he know alcoholics or what? Well, we're not going to give up our pride. We're just going to put it in our pocket. I mean, seriously, because who's going to let go of that stuff, right? And so I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about everything that leads up to this, and you know, like all the way back on the first requirement on page 60, the first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we're almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person's like an actor who wants to run the whole show. And this is the deal, guys. It's like, whether I was resentful, whether I was afraid, whether I was jealous or insecure, and I'm running on all of these defects on a constant basis, I'm busy playing God. I'm busy playing God in every single area of my life. So when we pocket our pride and go to it, illumine every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. This talks about some promises that our fifth step has. Withholding nothing, we're delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. Oh, even more, thank you. Kleenex. We feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And somebody wrote me a note. I always go back when I share to that first time and that first experience. And here was this person. Holy cow! It's coming out of the woodwork, darling. So my first time through this experience with Pastor Ron, and I sat on my couch, and I can remember it like it was yesterday. And I did the deal, you know, of illuminating every dark cranny of the past. And I sat before this man, and I know you're shocked, but I cried my eyes out. And I can see when I was done and I looked up from the pages, he looked me in the eye and he said, "Were you afraid I wasn't going to love you anymore?" And I'll never forget that as long as I live. And I was like, "Yeah." And, you know, next week I'll get into six and into how he took me through that stuff and all that. But that day, I saw those promises. I met my sponsor, my new sponsor, for lunch right immediately afterwards. And I walked into this restaurant. And what I felt spiritually was as if I was two people, if that makes any sense. I could look at myself of who I was and all these areas of my life that drove me because of fear, that drove me because of resentment, that drove me because of my ego or my pride or anything. And I could see myself through a totally different light. And I did feel these promises. See, when I'm full of pride and I'm full of ego and I'm full of fear and I'm all those things that drive me in my disease, I'm not the person who God would have me to be in my life today. And the alone at person, I could look the world in the eye and I was delighted and all that. And when I take this step with other girls and I'm able to point out to them, you know, normally what I say to them is, "Tell me the absolute worst thing that you weren't going to tell me now." And 9 times out of 10, it's not even on the page. But see, we're as sick as those secrets we keep. We're as disconnected from God as those secrets that we keep. I've done many fifth steps since then. Not as many as some people, but I've done quite a few. And I do continue to take personal inventory in my life. And so I came here hating everything about me. Absolutely hating me. And I can't afford to be that girl. I can't afford to hold on to that stuff. I can't afford to clean up my garbage. I can't afford to do that in my sobriety. It's like, I could drink a Red Bull and sit on a bunch of resentment and be scared to death and go to another meeting and get a little bit of relief. But I want to live a life of freedom today. I want to live a life of perfect peace and ease. I want to live a life of comfort. I want to be able to look the world in the eye. And through the grace of God and these steps, I'm able to do that today. So that's my story on step 5. And I'm going to cut off early. So thanks. The joke was awesome.
Let's thank Marion again. And we're going to bring up Heather for the secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Heather, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Taylor to come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, I'm Taylor. I'm an alcoholic. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would not be able to drink responsibly. We are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. We have had been restored to sanity. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of Alcoholics Anonymous centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
1940s-style Big Book sponsorship from forward to second edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I get a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone that needs a sponsor? Please raise your hand. Please stand. Let's get these folks back to God. Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30. The Big Book study starts at 7:15. We have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, the Little Red Book, and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet here every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15 p.m., and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. We have some events going on, and there's pamphlets and flyers on the back table if you want to get involved or have some fun in AA, and we will see you next week.
We have tonight's sessions and all the past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study. It's across the street on the third floor at 7:15. And those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. Also, if you smoke, please smoke over by where the smoking buckets are on the sidewalk, and please put your cigarette butts into the buckets. And we're going to go ahead and close with the Lord's Prayer. Who woke us up today? See you all Monday or next Thursday. Godspeed. Me anything in the air.
zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing, when you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby, and I hope.
Everywhere I go, just a light of mine.